This weekend, the K300 is celebrating its 40th annual sled dog race. The weekend marks Bethel's biggest annual event, and it's an exciting time along the Kuskokwim River as mushers race the 300 miles from Bethel to Tooleksac to Kalskak to Aniak and back. Two other races happen the same weekend, the Bogus Creek 150 and the 50-mile Akiak Dash. Over the race's four decades, a lot has changed, though the love of this great Alaska sport has remained. I'm joined by two guests in the studio this morning. Myron Anksman is the K300 founder and board president and two-time race winner, and Bev Hoffman, a former musher and longtime race volunteer who has also finished the K300. And we're supposed to be joined later on the phone. Oh, he's on the phone now. Pete, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, and of course, four-time K300 winner Pete Kaiser. Thank you all for being here.
Good morning. Good morning, Pete.
Morning.
Morning.
Isn't technology wonderful? You can't come because you're watching the baby. And yep. Were you cursing me?
No.
Oh, good. Okay.
Never.
Good morning. Oh.
Bev called Pete before the show just to make sure that he could join us.
Yeah. It wouldn't be a show without you, Pete. I already put it on Facebook and everyone's listening, right?
Okay.
Well, thank you, everyone. So it's been four decades this race has been running. So take us back to four decades ago. What was that like? What was the discussion there to say, we're going to start this race that's going to become this premier mid-distance race in Alaska?
Well, you know, Myron, he's on the back of the sled on the Iditarod. And he has a lot to think about while he's going all those miles to 1,049 miles plus to Nome. A lot to think about and go, we can do this. We can do this. So, Myron, tell us about that moment.
There was a little bit more involved. It was, this is too damn far. We should have something a little shorter. And we could do that right there in Bethel. And there were a lot of factors that went into that. I had a job and a family and a dog team, and it's really difficult to put all three of those together with doing the Iditarod back to back and back. And so it was clear that we had several components here. We had a lot of dog teams. We had certainly a trail area to put it on. And, you know, I kind of already knew that Bethel was the kind of zone where you could kind of plan a community event and get a lot of people involved. That's always been the case. So it seemed like we could pull it off, and we did. But there was no mention at the time of, hey, let's make this into
an annual thing.
Well, it was annual, but there was no suggestion that it is going to become one of the greatest events in the state. There was none of that discussion. We just hoped to pull it off.
Yeah.
So he calls us together, you know, just come over to my office. And we go over to his cabin and his office. And he says, I think we could pull off a 300-mile race to Aniak and back. And we're all going, okay, it's the mail trail. We can follow the traditional mail trail. And
who's we at this point?
My husband, John McDonald, Ken Ham, who was a lawyer here, Jim Barker.
Maybe Corey Flintoff, a KYU K-star at the time.
And then we put trail committee together, Bill Eisenbart and some other folks, and this is all before Pete is even thought of. You know, Pete is just not even thought of yet. His dad was running those early races, and Myron pulled us all together and convinced us, as a good lawyer can convince us, that we could do this. There was no money, and we thought, well, you know, we can do this. And how did the money thing come about? We had, I think, a $10,000 purse that year?
Yeah, it started out at 10, and we actually ended up paying 12 because we ended up a little more money than we suspected we would have. But one of the big ways that the money came through was old Chet Atkins, who ran Atkins Steel at the time. He's no longer around, and neither is his company. But he was a big local booster of stuff. And I think he wrote a check for $2,500. I have the letter on my wall. I think it was $2,500 that got us going. And there were lots of really small donations that made it clear we were going to make our goal. But at the time, there was so much public support that we were getting stuff, donations from people of $25, $50, and that pretty soon got us over the top, sort of the Bernie Sanders mm-hmm. approach to putting on a dog race.
And as Bev said, Pete, you weren't born at this point when the first Kuskokwim 300 occurred, but you were raised here in Bethel with the race happening every year. Now you've won the race four times. We'll see what happens this weekend.
Everybody's gunning for you, Pete.
How did this shape your becoming of a musher through having this race happening every year?
Well, it's probably the reason I am a musher, honestly. I mean, without this race and the K300 organization that has supported mushing out here for so long, we've got a pretty unique mushing scene out here, unlike most places in the state. So, watching this race and being involved since I was a little kid is what sparked my interest. Without that race right here, probably would never have materialized to be in the position I'm in today. So, yeah, pretty sure it's played a huge role in my career.
Pete, you started off with those kid races around the island, but your first big race was the Akiak Dash. And how old were you when that happened? Like 13 or 14?
Yeah, maybe 15. I'm not sure. Sometime in high school, but yeah, it was just kind of something we did for fun, you know. And then it got a lot more serious after high school.
And I know KYK has a recording of his infamous speech at the banquet that year. Him and Mike Jr. both. Do you remember your speech and what you said?
I don't, but I'm sure it was brief.
It was. Thank you.
What kind of, I mean, Pete, you just said that, you know, you think that the reason you are a musher, definitely the musher you are today, is because of the K300 organization, because of these races that happened. And then what do you all think about just the effect that this organization has had on mushing and around the community surrounding Bethel, being able to supply multiple competitive races, being able to supply thousands of dollars in prize money. How has that grown or affected over these decades?
Well, it definitely evolved. You know, at first it was just the K300, and then it was fun races. And, you know, mushing was dying out. Snow machines had moved in, and a lot of the local mushers were giving up their teams. And I think we even talked about it that night at Myron's office, that this was a way to maybe bring all that back. And, you know, we started with the K300, and I think it was 92, Myron, when we ran the first Bogus, and then we added the Akiak Dash. I can't remember the years, but we started adding all these other races, and it really, all that history was just going to be history. And then the K300 comes along, and we evolve into this family of races, and we continue to make history every year.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I think we started the Bogus in late 80s, I think 88 or so, and it was a very small race at the time. I think we had three or four teams the first year. But, you know, one thing that we did have that completely changed, and it's unfortunate it disappeared, and I think captured more local interest than really anything, and that is the weekend fun runs we used to have every Sunday. Most every weekend of the year, we would have a fun run on the river, 1, 3, and 5 dog runs. Most teams would show up with a team for each of those three events. The one dog was for toddlers up to 5 or 6 years old. And the three dog was up to the mouth of Strait Slough. We ran them up there, not racing, and then turned around and let them run back.
parents could catch them.
And then the five dog was around the island, and that's an event that was held dozens and dozens of times. And in Bethel at that time, there used to be 10 or 15 local dog teams. Many of them were just for that purpose. They were for nothing else other than recreation and the Sunday fun runs. And the participation level of not only racers but spectators, followers, was very high, and it was extremely fun. No prize money, just lots of fun. And that got a lot of people involved just to come down there at 1 o'clock on Sunday and for something to do. And, boy, I sure miss that. That was some of the most fun part of mushing ever.
Our kids who are now in their 40s and whatnot, that's how they all got started. And even Pete got started in those Sunday fun runs. And I'll never forget Colin in his first Sunday fun run. I mean,
and Colin's your son.
Yeah, and he's 41, and but he was like 3 or 4 years old. You throw him on the back of the sled, he hits the berm, he goes flying, and the dogs take off without him, the one dog. And I think that's when he realized that mushing is really hard work.
I think there was an early observation of those Sunday runs that I made that did hold true. I used to follow every one of them with a snow machine. I always had a kid or a neighbor or a friend in the races, but I almost never was. Once in a Great Wall, if we didn't have somebody, I'd go around the island, but it probably happened maybe 2 times. But I remember watching Pete in those races, in the fun runs, and it occurred to me very early on that if Pete was winning, he was happy and excited and really tuned in. And if he was back in the pack on those races, he had this disgusted look about him that I could almost draw a picture of. He'd be hanging on his sled, sort of slouching over. He wouldn't wave at you when you went by. And it was definitely clear that he was out to win even the Sunday fun runs.
You remember that, Pete?
Yeah, I remember those races pretty vividly. A lot of good memories from there. Might be exaggerating a little bit, but no, they were fun and super competitive amongst, you know, a lot of young kids and a lot of different age groups, really. And then some of the costume races were really hilarious. And yeah, there was a lot of fun races around the island.
Costume races? Pete, what did you dress up as?
Pete?
I wasn't in that one, but I was a spectator, and there was some, I can't remember all the costumes, but there was some pretty good wipeouts and torn up costumes at the finish line.
Which race was that?
That was the rookie race, and there was like Addie.
Yeah,
and she had that bright red leather dress and went spill. And it was cold. And, you know, people, my mushers always had to hang on. No matter what, hang on. And I remember Casey Burke going through an overflow and creating a wake. And, you know, just it was a time to get people on the back of a sled that had never been on the back of a sled. And some of my siblings, you know, it just the K300 has really prompted a lot of connection between on the Kuskokwim because of things like that. We had junior musher races, and we still try to do that annually, a junior musher race. And the surrounding villages that have dog teams, Akyak and Akichuk and Napuskiak, they have oftentimes have kids races. So it's evolved. You know, back when we were running back in the day, it was such a learning experience, you know, and it might segue into how the races evolved. We were out there freezing our butts off because there weren't all these new gear and fancy sled bags and foot warmers and hand warmers. You know, we just went out, I think, that first year. Myron, I know our team only made it to Akichuk, and it was so cold that people's fingers were, you know, frozen. And do you remember that?
You're talking the first 300?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very, very cold year. The challenges of getting around the trail that year were many, one of which was the fact that we started out at 22 below, and it went colder from there with a wind and a blizzard all in the same night. And I think KYUK has a report still on hand of how somewhere they recorded a wind chill of 101 below zero that night on the river. And it was a challenge to get through. We stopped the race for 24 hours because the trail had been destroyed by the storm. And we stopped the race in the middle of the race. I was in Antioch at the time with the team, and I was still sort of race chairman. I guess I was race chairman at the time. And so we kind of conducted a meeting over the phone and decided to hold up the race for 24 hours while they kind of reconstructed the trail. And instead of going around Whitefish, we just came back down the river. But it was quite an event. And actually, after the blizzard, not surprisingly, it turned to rain for a few hours. And we had a little bit of everything in that first event, but it kind of solidified the notion that we could do it. If we could do it in that kind of a situation, we could do it anytime. So we have had it 40 years in a row. And
and had everything.
It looks like it'll pull it off the same way this year.
And actually, I was thinking, and Pete is running everything in his last 4 years of even championships. He's experienced everything. But I think in 40 years, maybe a handful of years of where, oh, it's perfect, you know. I ran in a blizzard the year that Myron won in 83, and I think we had 17 scratches that year. I had no idea half the time where I was. And the next year was absolutely beautiful. And this year, well, it's not total ice, right? Pete, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, comparing to last year, for sure, this is, even with the last few warm days, this is definitely nicer than last year, and I think it's going to turn out all right.
And then last
year... we've seen everything in the race, and just in my 10 races, everything from 40 above and water on the river to 70 below wind chill and everything in between. So it's a very unique weather system out here, and seems to always come up with something for race weekend.
And Pete, how do you stay warm out there? I mean, Bev talked about, you know, obviously there's new gear out now, but when it is 70 below, how are you staying warm when you're on the trail and far from a village?
You don't necessarily stay toasty warm where you're just standing there really comfortable. You kind of got to keep moving and keep your blood flowing, and you just kind of stay warm enough, but you're never really, really warm at those temperatures. Because you really can't put so much clothing on that you can't move, and that's what it would take at those temperatures to stay really warm. So you just kind of stay warm enough.
Warm enough.
That's a kind of an important point. I raised that same point. The key to becoming a long-distance racer is learning to be a little uncomfortable for long stretches of time. And it is a kind of a art to that. You just kind of got to put your mind to the notion that, well, I can be a little cold, so what's the big deal about being a little cold? As long as it's not threatening your life and your safety, being a little cold is just a state of mind. And if any musher ever tells you that they are always toasty warm, well, they're kind of pulling your leg a little bit, because there's cold, and it sneaks in here and there no matter what. But that's the idea. You have to learn to accept the idea that not only cold, but tired. You're going to be tired. That's a little uncomfortable at times. You're going to sometimes have moisture in your clothes and stuff. Clammy, I guess would be the term. And you have to learn to just put up with that. You're sometimes going to be, some part's going to be a little sore. And you just got to put that out of your mind. All of that is part of being a long-distance musher. But the notion that it's... oh boy, I'm toasty warm and having a great time out here. Nah, that's not true.
But you know, when they invented those little warmers, hand warmers, foot warmers, that was after kind of I was done with mushing. Maybe I did my last Akiak dash in 50-mile-hour winds and knee-deep in water coming back. But wow, you know, if I was running today, I'd have those hand warmers and back warmers and foot warmers all over my body. I'd be toasty warm. Pete, do you use those?
I use a lot of hand warmers, yeah. But, yeah, you know, they wear off after a while, too.
8 hours.
They do make a difference, yeah. There is some new technology, but overall, you know, a lot of the gear is still pretty similar.
We were using, like, Frigiwares and, you know, just hardly any roughs except for, you know, the folks from the outlying communities that were running. They had, like, nice roughs. So really right away we're realizing we need better clothes. At least in our family it was like, crap, that was really cold. Or, you know, just you're lying in a overnight in a blizzard, huddled in your sled with a dog team thinking, why am I out here? I'm so friggin' cold. And then you do things to make yourself a little warmer. Better boots, better hand gear, beaver mittens, you know. So, but it's been really interesting. Even the technology of how we talk about the K3N. Back then, this was our headquarters. KYUK was the headquarters those first couple years where most of the phones in the village, there was one phone. There was no internet. We were on typewriters. Myron's calling from Antioch that first year to KYUK. You know, we're just trying to figure out how to make this work. I'm worried about my husband out there. Where the heck is he? And he shows back up in Bethel that same night with fingers that were black. But it was just real interesting those first years of, like, Jim Barker flying the river and meeting. Maybe you were on those flights, too, talking about where can we put this trail in? Where was that back mail trail, you know? And nowadays, you know, we have to adjust the trail sometimes, but, you know, it's just, we have all the technology and super snow machines and a lot of support, so much support in this community to get that trail in, to get the start line up, you know, just, we're not hand sewing banners anymore.